Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey guys, welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. I hope I'm not talking over Joe and Rebecca. We're having a little audio issue here with the show. We have our special guest, Ann Moss Rogers, on the line with us. We're going to have Joe and Rebecca go ahead and try to call back in. I'm going to play a quick song real quick. We'll come back and we'll restart the show with Joe and Rebecca in just a couple of moments here. So let's go ahead and play a little bit of... let's do a little bit of Barbara Streisand. That always starts the morning good. Here's My Man. Hold on one second.
Oh, my man, I love him so. He'll never know. All my life is just despair. But I don't care when he takes me in his arms. The world is bright, all right. What's the difference if I say I'll go away when I know I'll cost me a lot, but there's one thing that I've got, it's my man. Cold and wet, tired, you bet, but all that I soon forget with my man. He's not much for looks, a no hero out of books is my man. Two or three girls has he that he likes as well as me, but I love him. Oh, my man, I love him so. He'll never know. All my life is just despair, but I don't care when he takes me in his arms.
And we're back, I hope. Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Okay, good. Scott can hear us now. Hopefully you guys can hear us too. And let's try this again. Everybody, please welcome to the show, Miss Ann Moss Rogers.
Yay!
Yay!
We didn't get to
we didn't get to do the intro for her, honey. Remember, because they didn't hear us the last time.
Oh, so that's right. We got to do the intro again.
Give us a second here.
All right, you didn't hear that. You didn't pop up. Hang on. We are professional.
We've got an important show for you this morning. Our guest is a blogger, an advocate, and a public speaker, focusing her energy on the stigma surrounding mental illness and suicide. She has lost a loved one to suicide, but has found a way to persevere to become a voice for the voiceless. So now we can welcome Ann Moss Rogers.
Yay!
Thank you. Yay! Thank you. And Ann Moss is my first name. It's a Southern thing. So it's both words. It's my first name, Ann Moss.
Yep. Yep, we got that on, and Beck made sure to remind me of that fact too. So, yep. So we are good. We are in good footing.
Yep.
So, how are you this morning?
It's good. Cold here. What about there?
It's freezing. It is.
Yeah.
Literally too cold. You know, and I'm a big fan of cold weather. I'm not gonna lie. I do not like the 90 degree with 100% humidity days. Those are the bane of my existence. I live for colder weather because I figure I can always put more layers on. And some days I do walk out the door looking like the little kid from A Christmas Story that can't put his arms down. But, you know, I would prefer that to sweating. So,
yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm good. But yeah, this cold weather that we're seeing now is just, it's too much.
It's Arctic. It really is.
I kid you not, heard this on the radio yesterday. Detroit was colder than Anchorage, Alaska yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Brutal.
I'm never moving
there.
Anchorage is having like 30, 40 degree weather. They're actually warm. They're walking around without coats on and everything. And, you know, we're freezing our tuchus off. So.
Yeah. Wow.
So before we get started, do you have any questions for us, Ann Moss?
Not yet, but I might. I might later on in the show.
Okay,
alrighty.
That sounds good. Well, let's jump in, babe.
Okay. So the first question we have for you is: where did your mental health journey begin? How did you get on this path?
I'd say when my youngest son was in middle school, I started noticing some changes. I mean, that's the son that died by suicide about 2.5 years ago. So he was always the funniest and most popular kid in school. But it was around middle school, you know, he was diagnosed with ADHD, had a rare sleep disorder. But I saw some signs of anxiety, and so I guess I really dove in about 2010 and said, I'm going to join a mental health board, and we're going to start talking about this. And I just absolutely ran up against a brick wall. Nobody wanted to talk about this. So I've been at this for 8 years, and I've seen changes, which is good, but it's still been very, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, it's like trying to turn a boat in the water that's way too big for its rudder.
Right, exactly.
You know,
I mean, I remember trying to get speaking engagements in 2010. I could not dynamite a door down. I couldn't get anybody to let me in. And I probably did 2 that year. I did 55 last year.
Wow.
I know.
That's great because you're getting out there and speaking it. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. Wow.
Wow.
And then my blog is Emotionally Naked, and it reached 250,000 in the first 18 months. So that
wow.
really shows you how much things have changed in the last 8 years.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that we're seeing, too, is that people are, you know, finally they're more willing to talk about it and talk about what they're going through. I actually noticed a friend of mine that I've had for a few years now. He's a younger fella. He posted something on Instagram yesterday for the first time, stating that, you know, he has depression and he's battling, and, you know, he's been battling it for a few years, and all the struggles he's been going through. And it's like you said with your son, you know, you wouldn't have expected it from him, out of nowhere.
Right.
And so just being able to be comfortable enough to, you know, come out of your own skin and talk about it is, you know, that's a huge first step for people.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And what bothers me is that because we're not talking about it enough, or we're trying to protect our children, we're not talking about mental illness, addiction, or suicide. And people seem to think that if you talk about suicide, it will cause somebody to think about suicide. But there's been multiple studies that prove just the opposite. The more you talk about it, the more people reach out for help because they realize, okay, there is an issue and there is a way to get help, and I don't have to suffer this all by myself. So that's the bigger picture part is really when I started to get more calls to do public speaking, particularly in the schools, it was once they started having more suicides. And that, you know, that's kind of sad that we had to wait till it was that bad. Till people lost their lives before they would start talking about it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, and that's what we, but that's, for some people, that's what it takes is, you know, going through a tragedy like that before they're, you know, willing to make a change on something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. And
yeah,
our governments really just reacted to. What were you going to say, Rebecca? I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. I was just going to say we had been talking previously about my situation with trying to get in to talk to, because obviously the younger you reach a child, the better it is, because, you know, like I said to you, they teach them sex ed. Why can't they teach them, you know, about mental health? And
exactly.
Who knows what my life would have become if I'd had a discussion, you know, an ongoing discussion or dialogue when I was younger or even in high school, you know, when my symptoms really started to appear was, you know, later high school years. Who knows what my life would have been if somebody had just sat down and talked to me about this. So I just think it's so important that you keep doing the work that you're doing, because, you know, however many you can reach in one discussion, and who knows what the ripple effect is of your presentations for, you know, who knows who's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know,
right.
And
exactly.
Who they're going to spread the information to.
Exactly.
You know, Rebecca, I can usually look out in the audience and get some idea of how many people in the audience have thought about it or attempted it. You can read it on their faces. And typically they'll come up and talk to me afterwards. But they didn't do that at first, because I went in there and I would give a presentation and nobody would ask questions because they're teenagers.
Right.
And then I had to develop a way to give the presentation, and I give it within the story about Charles. So I don't go outside those boundaries. Every story I tell has to do with somebody about their age. And typically it's about my son. But the way I got them off their feet is we kind of do some role play where I get them up with scripts and I get them reading these scripts, or I get them up as a group. And we kind of have like a Dr. Seuss poem that we do that I made up that talks about suicide and depression. And it's, you know, not in a box. We don't talk about it, not in a box, not with a fox, not with a mouse, not in a house. So it's actually kind of got a cadence and it's kind of fun, so they remember And it's after that that they'll start asking me questions because they've kind of laughed and they've kind of let off some steam and they're standing close to me then. And then they'll start to open up and tell me their stories. Well, my aunt suffers from bipolar disorder. My uncle has schizophrenia. My father died by suicide. And that's when I get their stories. So it took me a little bit of time and practice to develop parts of my presentation that got them engaged. So it's a different presentation than the one I might give to adults because they're sort of feeling desperate and they want to find help for their child. So they're going to ask questions. And they reach out to me, and I always put up my email and my phone number so that they know where to find me. And they'll often follow up if they don't get to talk with me afterwards. So that part has been an interesting journey as to how to keep the kids engaged with the presentation and how to get them to start having a conversation afterwards.
Yeah.
So how do you personally combat the grief from losing your son? Did you ever suffer from any mental health conditions prior
to
that?
I didn't, and it's just luck of the draw. I'm not genetically predisposed to a mental illness or addiction, so that's just luck of genetics. But once we got the news that my son killed himself, which I didn't expect. I mean, I had a child that suffered from depression, anxiety, became addicted to heroin in the last 9 months of his life. And while he was going to withdrawal, he killed himself. And I expected that he could have died from overdose. And it was a complete and utter shock that it was suicide. And somebody who suffers from addiction and mental illness is 6 times more likely to die by suicide. Of all the mental health professionals, nobody ever told me that. And that would have been nice to know. So when I got the news, that first week you're just a complete and utter zombie. Well, actually, you are that first month.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, my God, am I going to survive this? But the night we found out, my husband and I, before we went to bed, I looked at him and I said, this can't be the last chapter of our lives. We've got to basically start over. And he says, I'm with you. And then I had to find outlets. And the first thing I did, because nobody was talking about my son. Nobody would mention his name. And to a parent that's lost a child, that's the worst thing, is saying nothing. So I wrote a newspaper article called Honoring My Son, That Died by Suicide Is Not the End of My Story. And it went viral. And I couldn't believe it because I thought it was an article nobody would ever read. And Becca and Joe, that article took me 6 months to write. It was agony. It was, I can't describe the agony, but there is something about diving into your grief and letting it take you with it that allows you to let go of some things. And after I finished that article, I realized, wow, this whole process helped me in my grief journey. So right before it published, I said, I've got to keep writing, and I have got to keep talking, like your hashtag, MHTalking, excellent, hashtag, love that movement, because it's always been so shrouded in shame and silence. I mean, this is a biological thing that happens in your brain. It's an illness, and we're not talking about it, so we're cheating ourselves and each other out of finding solutions and methods of helping people and helping ourselves as well. So I started the blog, and I thought nobody's ever going to read this sad stuff. and, you know, I'm exposing people to my ugly naked grief. And what I found is other people were reading their story in mine, that there were so many other people suffering from this. And then other people wanted to share their story on the blog. And I'm like, oh, we've got to start doing that. So I have guest posts, and they're very popular. And it's just, it's created this community, this sort of grassroots community. And everybody says to me, oh, you're doing such good things. But this helps me too. It's part of my grief journey. And the village we've created is my lifeline too. And it's really, really helped me forgive myself. It's helped me understand. It's just been everything to me, and I didn't expect that.
It's great that, you know, people are identifying with your writing, and, you know, it's cathartic for you. That's something that we noticed with back with her writing too, was that, you know, when people see, you know, what you're writing about, your story, they're reading it, they identify and they reach out and they say, hey, that's me too. I'm going through that too, or I'm going through a similar thing, you know? And I think it brings a bigger sense of community to all of us, because we realize, you know, we're all going through stuff, but we're not alone, you know?
Yeah.
We're all in this together, you know, we're all on this planet together, just trying to make our way. And, you know, we all run into these struggles, and, you know, it can be a very isolating feeling, you know? So yeah, you know, being able to put your thoughts down into words and have people read it, recognize it, appreciate it, sympathize with it, empathize with it, all these things, it's, you know, that's us truly being in service to one another.
Exactly.
Which I think is important, you know.
And what I really like is the fact that both you and Becca have looked at this as a marathon. I mean, I've had some failures in the last 8 years, but I haven't given up. And you guys have had failures in the last 7 years, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. And by kind of sticking to it and not giving up and trying different things and failing and restarting, we have developed our own resilience, and we've developed our own audience to help with this, with mental illness. And I saw that, Becca, a long time ago, and I was like, she and I share, you know, similar personality traits, and that we're not giving up, you know, we're not giving up on this subject. And it's nice to have other people that also feel that way, because it bolsters you and keeps you going on days you think, oh my gosh, this is just not going well.
Yeah, you get those days, you're like, I can't do this anymore. You know, and we've gone through that. You know, we've felt taxed at different times with different parts of this, and it's like, you know, God, I don't have the strength to do this, you know. And then you read something or somebody says something to you, and it just reaffirms it for you, you know.
Yes, exactly. And isn't it funny, Joe, that those comments come at just the right time?
You know, yeah, they always do.
They always do. You're like, I just need to give up. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a crap. And then just one person will say something, and you're like, wow, you know, that's all I needed. I just needed a little bit of encouragement today. So it's sort of like those times when you think you're going to give up. It's kind of an opportunity for you to pull to yourself a little bit, to let it ruminate in your mind, and so you can refuel and come back and fight another day. And
right.
That's kind of the way. So I've noticed that that's a cycle. And I think you can apply that to a lot of things in life, even thoughts of suicide, because I think one thing that people don't realize, young people especially, is they think when they have those thoughts, they're going to be permanent. And thoughts are not permanent. Feelings are not permanent. They go away, and it comes back. It's cyclical. And the older you get and you develop strategies and you can tell yourself in rational thought, oh, that feeling is temporary, and I need to have this strategy when I feel that way. And the young people just haven't developed those strategies. And most people who've lived with it for a while and have gotten help have those strategies or have developed them. And I think that's why it's so important to talk about it, so that we let people know that their feelings are not permanent. They are temporary.
Right. Exactly. At this point in the show, we're going to take a little break.
Okay.
So we're going to be listening to No One Is Alone by Alexander Rodriguez.
And join us back on the show right after the break.
Yep, just a couple minutes. Thanks for listening.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes, fathers, mothers, people make mistakes, holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side. Someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot that they are not alone. No one is alone. Hard to see the light now. Just don't let it go. Things will come out right now. We can make it so. Someone is on your side. No one is alone.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. We are so glad to have you with us today, and we are thrilled to have our guest Ann Moss Rogers join us this fine morning.
Yep. Thanks for being with us today, you guys, and thanks for taking the time to listen to us. And Ann Moss, in particular, thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning.
I'm honored to be here. Really.
Next question I've got. Let me ask my wife this. Should I ask her that one or that one?
Ask her to elaborate on that one.
Okay. Would you care to elaborate on your blog called...
Where people can
find it.
Can find it, yep. Yeah.
The blog is called Emotionally Naked. And please tell our listeners all about it.
Okay. Usually people Google Emotionally Naked, and that's how they found it. I started it on a URL that I owned called AnnMoss.com, and I've owned it for about 12 years. And in my distress, I just started it on that. I couldn't buy the URL Emotionally Naked. It was already purchased, but I have bought that domain name now. So if you type in EmotionallyNaked.com, it'll take you to the site. That's where you find it. I've got early signs of depression in my son. Did my son Charles show signs of suicide early? How did heroin talk to Charles? 7 reasons I think we're seeing more teen depression. So I talk about a lot of things. It is what the title is, Emotionally Naked. Probably one of my most popular posts is the final 48 hours, where I talk about the day I got the news and then the day after and how I felt. And I didn't think anybody would ever read that, but 16,000 people came to the site one day.
Wow.
And I could not figure out why anybody was reading that. It was about 9 months after he died. And I thought, why did I even write this? I'm exposing everybody to my ugly, naked grief. I felt shame or guilt. And then I got a letter or a message from a girl named Lauren that said, 2 days ago, I thought about killing myself. Reading a post from a mother who felt such devastating pain, I've decided to reach out for help. And I mean, I cried and I cried when I got that message. And I wrote her back and I said, I've got to put this message on my blog. Are you okay with that? And she said, yes. And she literally called her parents after reading that blog post, and she said, I've been suffering with thoughts of suicide and depression for 4 years, and I've been afraid to tell you, and I need help. And the next thing,
wow,
I'm watching her Facebook page, and there's a picture of her and her mother, because she lived about 2 hours away. So her mother got in the car and went down there, and she bought her own car about a year ago. She's got a full-time job. She's found a medication that works. She's found a therapist that's good for her. And it took a lot of work for her to find the right medication. It took a lot of patience and work to find the therapist. And she said, I just needed one thing to validate that. And that's when I realized writing and connecting with others, even online, can save lives. So
yeah,
there are a number of posts I write for the express purpose of ranking on Google, and it's worked. So people will Google certain phrases when they are in a moment of despair, and they will find the blog, and they will leave me messages similar to what Lauren said. I never thought that was possible. So I applied digital marketing techniques. You know, I owned a digital marketing business for 7 years. This is the stuff I know.
Right.
So I was able to apply those strategies to save lives. And if it weren't for the village of people that are sharing those posts and making comments, I would never be I would never have that kind of reach. So it's a group effort. It's not just me and I'm wonderful. It's this whole grassroots effort has reached people and saved lives. And
that's
that
awesome.
Is very, and it's very rewarding to me. Very rewarding.
Yeah, that's.
I can imagine.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, I got kind of choked up when you're talking about Lauren a little bit there, you know, just because, you know, it's beautiful when, you know, somebody can have that kind of experience based on what you're writing, and it can help them to turn left when they would have turned right, you know.
Yeah, I've got a girl in my life that is similar to your Lauren. Her name is Jenna, and she's actually, she read my book and did a beautiful review of it, and then was a student at the time and wrote her paper for school, you know, about somebody you admired, and she actually wrote it about me, having never even actually spoken to me. She just took what she learned in my book and you know, parlayed it into this paper for school, and it was really, I was really emotional when she told me that, and we've been friends now since then, and she's a great girl. I love her to death. Joe loves her.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's like our surrogate daughter or something. Yeah. You know, just we, you know, and Jenna, if you're listening, we love you. So just want to shoot that out there, but yeah, she's an amazing girl. So it's when you get that kind of an acknowledgement that what you're doing is actually reaching and helping people. I think it's really the most important thing out there, you know.
That human connection. That human connection. We crave it, and it makes your life richer. It does.
It really does.
I had another comment on one of my posts, and the post is, so you are contemplating suicide. And somebody named Reese said, tonight I was contemplating ending my life, feeling depressed, sad, defeated. And she said, I looked online on how to die by hanging, and I came across this post, and safe to say, this has been an eye-opener of the reality of what I was about to do, and it sparked something within me, and I'm going to work towards a goal of reaching out for help, and I get those messages just at those times when I need it the most, and I never get one that I don't cry tears of joy. Now, I can't say what happens in the next week, but I kept somebody safe for now.
All right.
That's how we have to look at it. We kept somebody safe for now. And hopefully, that was the first step that kind of turned things around for them, that made them want to fight for life.
You know, that's the thing is humanity has that innate drive for self-preservation, you know. Sometimes it just takes one little thing, you know, and it'll set that spark off, and, you know, they'll change their mind. They will do the other thing that will keep them alive, you know.
Yeah.
And Moss, do you have any advice for a family that is struggling with a loved one with mental illness?
I do. And it is, the first one is get educated. And I think that, You can read Becca's book. If your child has bipolar disorder, you need to understand what goes on in the mind of somebody that suffers from that mental illness. NAMI, the National Institute of Mental Illness, has an excellent class called Family to Family. And it helps families. It's like a 12 or 8-week course. It's free. It's available in everywhere in the United States. And it is so worthwhile. And you go and you learn how to support somebody in your family with mental illness. Because our typical parenting or techniques for dealing with other people really don't always apply to somebody that suffers from mental illness. We start making judgment. We start punishing when what people really need is understanding, and they need help, or they need intervention, or they need hospitalization, or they need transition after hospitalization. We have to, just like if you have a family member that has diabetes, you're going to figure out, okay, if their blood sugar is low and they start talking oddly and not making a lot of sense, you know to go get the peanut butter, that they need more protein, or to call 911 and go to the hospital. Same thing goes with mental illness. There are certain signs you need to look for in your loved one so that you know to intervene. So it's just like physical health. And we need to start treating it that way. So the first most important thing is to get educated, because it's not just their recovery. It's yours too. The whole family has to shift and understand, because a lot of people that I talk to, they'll say, my aunt still doesn't understand, and will say things that are hurtful. And a lot of these things, I mean, Becca, you know, I don't know what it's like every day to manage a mental illness, but I have friends that do. And it takes work every single day to, you know, take your medications on time. To that self-care, you've got to do it. And people need to understand that that is part of the equation. So I'd say that's the first most important thing, is that to support your loved one, you've got to understand what they're going through. And becoming educated, and not to shroud it in shame. Be open and talk about it. Don't be ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed. Do people that have heart disease, are they ashamed of it?
No.
We gotta,
no.
We got to change
cancer
that.
And...
Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny.
Stigma.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned the, you know, if you care about somebody, you know, you do the education and everything. It made me remember something going back to right around the time that Beck and I first met. You know, she was not in a great place in her life at the time. She was really struggling with her mental health. I think she had just gotten out of a group home, if I remember correctly. And she had, now this is the very early days of the internet when we met, and she had found all these different articles explaining, you know, bipolar disorder and, you know, anxiety and all these other different things. And she's like, you know, look, if we're going to have any kind of relationship or friendship or know each other, you should really read this stuff and kind of understand what I'm going through. And I remember being really surprised by that and happy that she cared enough about me to give all these materials to me to help me understand her better. And I'm really grateful to this day that she did, because it helped me with understanding what she was going through, and, you know, to have a little more sympathy towards what she dealt with, and just getting an understanding of you know, what she was going through and, you know, what would help and what didn't help and, you know, all these different things, you know. And so, yeah, the education of it is really the most important thing for those out there is understand what your loved one is going through.
Right.
Joe, you're little, just like, I'm sitting here crying. You're just like the most wonderful man.
Oh,
I know why you love him. Oh, my gosh, Becca. Who would take the time? Who would take the time to do that? I mean, oh, my gosh, can we clone you?
Yeah, really.
Oh, stop. You're going to give me a big head now. And I already got enough of you as it is.
I don't believe that anybody that has that much empathy and compassion is not an egotistical person. It's just not. It's not possible.
Oh, thank you. I don't know what to say.
But
yeah, I got pretty lucky.
Back, you did this back when that wasn't typical. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You
know, that's
you loved somebody and you realized it was worth it.
You know, and that's the thing, and I've said this all along. You know, I've told her this in her darkest moments is that, you know, I'm in love with you. You are not your illness, you know, and that's something that people with stigma need to understand is that, you know, if a person is suffering from bipolar disorder or they're suffering from, you know, anxiety or any number of mental health issues. They are not their diagnosis any more than somebody with cancer is, you know, cancer or diabetes. It's
exactly
they have that. They are not it. You know, and
right.
I tell her that I'm like, you know, look, you are an incredible, wonderful woman, and I love you to the end of the earth. You know, your illnesses are just something that, you know, we have to deal with, and
just
we deal with it together.
It's a fun little bonus.
Yeah, it's a fun little bonus. That's what it is. You know, so, you know,
bonus. I love that.
Yeah, you know, we embrace the good days, and when she has a bad days, we get through it together. You know, that was kind of a rambly answer, but.
it's wonderful, and I think it's wonderful hearing that, and I appreciate you expanding on it.
Oh, no problem.
Well, before we have to get going for this morning, I wanted to get in a question about your extremely worthy cause that you're working on, which is Beacon Tree.
Yes.
You want to talk to us a little bit about that project?
Absolutely. I've been on the board for Beacon Tree since 2010. I became president about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And Beacon Tree Foundation is an organization that are advocates for youth mental health. And we have two programs. One is our family grant program, where we pay for psychological evaluations for children, mostly in the Richmond, Virginia, Tri-Cities area. And so what happens is caseworkers who have a family that can't pay for the psychological evaluation or their insurance copay will contact us, and we will, you know, cover that gap payment so that that child can get a treatment plan or so that child can qualify for services in school, because a lot of those services in school are free, but they can't qualify without a diagnosis. So that's one of our programs. The other is we're launching one in the fall called Preventure. And that is an evidence-based school program associated with a 30 to 80% reduction in adolescent substance use. But the intervention focuses on teaching teens coping strategies based on personality traits that have shown a predisposition to addiction. And three of the four of those personality traits are mental health traits. So it's hopelessness, anxiety sensitivity, impulsiveness, and sensation seeking. And by teaching teenagers coping strategies, we're teaching them something they can use their entire lives. What's interesting about these personality traits is they are often associated with our best musicians, our finest actors, our most impressive entrepreneurs and innovators. So what we're essentially doing is taking personality traits that could become troublesome and end up with high-risk behavior and funneling it towards the good stuff so that those kids can be creative and innovative instead of ending up in jail, dropping out of school, or dying by suicide or overdose. So in seeing the results of this program, I thought we've got to bring this to the United States. And we have one school in the United States doing that currently. And that school is a very small school in Hanover County, Virginia. And we will be launching it in either one or two schools in the fall, which will make three schools in the United States implementing this. And I want it to be everywhere. Life skills training is something that we should have in every school. And I agree with Rebecca. We should have mental health training for teachers and students in every school in the world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree, too. Okay, last and quickly, how can people get in touch with you on social media?
They can just look up Ann Moss Rogers. And I've got a Facebook page. I got a Twitter. I have a lot of followers on LinkedIn, believe it or not.
Okay.
You can look up Emotionally Naked. You can contact me through the contact form. I am not hard to find. If you Google my name, I'm a stalker's dream.
And just so everybody knows, it's Anne Moss, Moss, and then Rogers, Rogers. And you've got annemoss.com too, don't you?
I do. Annemoss.
Okay, perfect.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for being with us today, Ann Moss. We really appreciate it. It was a very enlightening discussion.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully. The programs that you're working on, especially with Beacon Tree, you know, will branch out and, you know, get to the rest of the nation. Cause I think this is all beneficial stuff for sure. If we're going to have any kind of change in stigma, we're going to have any kind of change in outlook on mental health. It's going to start with, you know, the kids basically.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We got to start with the younger generation. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for having me today. I really, really appreciate it. And I love what you're doing. And, you know, I follow you, Becca, and all
yep.
that you're doing.
Yep, and I follow you as well. And we'll keep in touch. And if anything changes for you or you go, you know, any further with your Beacon Tree Foundation, correct?
Yeah.
If you make
writing a book too about my son. So I'm kind of following in your footsteps. You've got two books ahead of me.
All righty. Well, when that comes out, give us a shout and we'll have you back on the show again.
Absolutely. We would love to feature
great.
That.
And just one quick programming note. Next week, we will have a double show. We have Zach Valenti at 11 a.m. And at noon, we have a reschedule from last week, Kevin Hines.
Yep.
We think we've got all the time zone issues worked out and should be able to get that one under our belts, too. So, again, thank you, Ann Moss. And we'll be seeing you guys next week. Here is Brandon and James with You Belong. Mm-hmm.
fighting the law of attraction, never the one taking action. Years of denying this beauty inside. Sleeping, scared of the fear they'd speak, and I never knew I was a beacon, waiting and waiting to light up the sky. When you're down and out, don't know what to do, what I found for me, I can be for you. If it comes from love, it'll never.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.